Welcome to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Andy Jones, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Thanks very much for tuning into your local campus and community radio station on a Wednesday afternoon. I'm very happy to have you here. I'm very happy to introduce you to two guests, one of whom you may already know. David Breaux is here in the studio. David Breaux is known locally here in the city of Davis as the Compassion Guy. You probably know him if you've driven around town. You can often find him standing at the corner of 3rd and C Streets, across the street from two restaurants and kitty corner from the Farmers Market Park. He's here in the studio to talk about compassion, about his new book, and about what inspires him. Some of it may inspire you as well. And then we'll be joined in the second half hour by Kevin Simmons. Kevin Simmons is a poet. He's a musician. And I believe he has won an Emmy for work that he's done on a play. We'll ask him about that. Currently, he is a writer and composer who teaches privately in San Francisco. He's a filmmaker as well as poet and musician, born in Chicago and raised in New Orleans. He's going to be giving a reading at the Sacramento Poetry Center this coming Monday evening at 7:30, and we'll ask him to sample his work. So, Kevin Simmons, David Breaux, interruptions in the form of jazz, everything that you've come to expect on KDVS on a Wednesday afternoon. This is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. Today is September 7th. I'd like to give a quick shout out to my wife, Kate. 19 years now we've been married. Both of us look much too young to have been married that long. So I'm sure that between the two of us, we'll be able to rack up, oh, let's say, a century of married life to one another. Let's see. Place your bets now. Thanks for tuning in to KDVS this afternoon. David Breaux is here in the studio. David Breaux is from Duarte, California. He graduated from Stanford, earning a degree in urban studies with a focus on community organization. He recently published a book entitled A Compilation of Concepts on Compassion, comprised of thousands of anonymous entries in reply to the question, what is compassion? He began collecting these definitions in 2009 from people that he met on the street or, in the case of myself, on campus. He's been raising awareness about compassion in the years since, and now he's in the studios of KDVS to talk about his work. David Breaux, welcome back to KDVS and welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Hello.
Good to have you here. So people know you as that compassion guy who stands out on the corner of 3rd and C Streets here in the city of Davis, smiling at people, asking a familiar, friendly question about compassion. You must know a lot of people in this town by now.
Yes. I knew one person coming to Davis in 2009, and I think I know about a couple hundred now.
Yeah. How is it that you chose Davis for your work on compassion?
I came here through circumstances. I was running out of money, and I wanted to live with a friend, and the friend lived here in Davis. So he had offered up a place, and so I came here in May of 2009.
Okay. 2 years ago, when you're out there at the corner of 3rd and C, you see people coming. Do you often have to rack your brain? Do I know this person? Have I already asked the question? Do I need to ask again? Because that's a lot of people you have to keep in your visual database.
Exactly, yes. I developed a technique, and I've gotten better at facial recognition over the last couple of years. At this point, it's more spontaneous. I think where I'm at the corner of Stan Third, I've asked most of the people that pass by that corner.
Right.
And part of the strategy is, since it's a new school year, there'll be new people, new students passing by. So as of late, maybe the last month or so, I would say the beginning of the second summer session, there's been new faces. So yes, I've had to concentrate on recognizing people. And a challenge is the seasonal change. It's just the things that people wear versus summer versus what they wear in the winter, covering up with sunglasses or with beanies,
right,
kind of thing.
So these are different cues you use to pay attention to who you've spoken to before.
Correct.
Now, I'm sure people who know you, who know about you, who have talked to you, they probably break into smile when they see you, even if it's a slight smile. Do you think that could be a trigger as well, that if someone's already smiling and making eye contact, maybe they already know you? And it's the people who seem to be focused on their destination or not making eye contact. Maybe those are the people that you need to get their attention.
Again, correct.
Yeah.
People, since doing it over the last couple of years, the people that actually say hello, in my head, I think I've already asked this person. The people that smile or make eye contact, I've already asked. There are a few exceptions of the... For example, there's been other media stories about what I've done. So people will come by and sort of slow down, make eye contact, and then in my head, I do a little Rolodex in my head.
Right.
Have I asked this person or not? And I'd say most of the time that this person has actually come to be asked. There's a few people that actually come, slow down, say, I heard about you in the paper or online, and they say, and so I ask them. Over time, most people that do pass by, yeah, they do smile, or a lot of people stop, have conversations all day long.
That's great. I wonder, I think you mentioned, you grew up in Duarte. You've lived near the Stanford campus. I remember from attending your event early last month that you've lived in Oakland as well.
Correct.
You're now here in Davis. Do you think that people in Davis might naturally be friendlier than people in other parts of the state, other parts of the country or the world, as I found them? Well, last time I went to Washington, D.C., I greeted all sorts of people on the street, and it was a one-way conversation, I found. So I had to give up that Davis habit. But I'm wondering if you find people friendlier here, and if that leads to perhaps more thoughtful thoughts on compassion.
I think over the course of doing it here in Davis, first of all, I would say I really don't have something to compare it to.
Right, because this is a Davis project.
It started in Davis, or it actually started for about 4 to 5 days in Oakland without the actual intent of it being a lifelong duty.
Right.
The lifelong duty started here in Davis. To answer your question, people here in Davis are friendly. A lot of people know what I'm doing. They're accepting of the fact that I'm doing something positive on the corner. To give a slight comparison to Oakland, the few days I did do it in Oakland,
mm-hmm.
I would say that people were receptive. I know that this project stemmed out of me wanting to do something. And one of the things that I did initially was to sit out in front of Peace and hold up $1 bills. And of course, that is different than asking people about compassion, you know,
right.
Money versus asking a question. I did find that there was a general friendliness of people in front of the Peace as well. One of the stories is that the person that was working at Peace came out and said that people were tipping more. And he brought out a tea, and it was getting cool at night, made sure I was all right. The other story was I had given $4 to four teenage boys. And about 20 minutes later, they came back, and they had bought a sweatshirt with the money I had given them, plus, you know, obviously $4 sweatshirts are more than $4. They contributed their own money to buying a sweatshirt. So in that sense, there was friendliness that was happening. Again, that was an evening, actually, in Oakland, and this has been 2 years, so keep that in mind, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the compassion guy, David Bro, is here in the studios of KDBS. I'm going to ask him a few more questions after we hear this important public service announcement. You're listening to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on your local campus and community radio station, KDVS. If you have a question for David Bro, you can give us a call here at the studio, 530-752-2777. We'll be right back.
I'm driving.
Since when?
Since you turned into Mr. Road Rage.
You're exaggerating.
Steve, that guy barely hit us and you jerked him out of his car and punched him.
He was on his cell phone. He deserved it.
But what if I do something to deserve it?
I've never hurt you.
I'm not so sure.
What do you mean?
Well, I'm kind of starting to be afraid of you.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not. Don't let rage turn your words into weapons. Rage hurts. Love hurts.
Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. David Bro is here. He's the author of a new book, a compilation called A Compilation of Concepts on Compassion. I bought a copy of the book recently and was reading it. It's organized in chronological order, that is, according to the day in the last couple of years, that David Bro inspired someone to write down their own thoughts or to dictate their own thoughts on this concept of what is compassion. I was trying to remember when it was, about a year and 3 months ago, maybe a year and a half ago, when I talked to David on this topic. But as insightful as I'm sure that I wasn't able to pinpoint my own precise thoughts on compassion, because there are so many insights found in this book. He's selling the book at the corner of C and 3rd Streets here in the city of Davis. It's a compilation of concepts on compassion. And David Bro is here in the studios of 14 Lower Freeborn this afternoon. So we mentioned Oakland. I mentioned Duarte and Stanford briefly. I'm sure a lot of people are wondering what has inspired this this life's work on compassion that you have taken on. And when did that inspiration hit you?
At the beginning of 2009, I came across a video online that spoke to the subject of compassion. at that time, I'd rarely thought about it. I rarely used it in dialogue or discussion. So I got a pen and a notepad, and I tried to come up with my own concept of compassion. And over the course of 4 or 5 days, I felt unsatisfied with it. So I went out about in the community of Oakland to try to get a collective definition. And that was over the course of maybe 4 or 5 days. And while doing that, I came across another video about a man who walked across the country because he saw 2 oil barges collide. And in this video, he encourages everyone to be activists and whatever you want to do it now. And for myself, the tipping point was the example of a woman named Peace Pilgrim who walked until given shelter and fasted until given food in hopes that humankind would find or discover the ways of peace. And she did this for 28 years at the end of her life. After seeing this and finding out about it, I thought to myself, well, I'm young. I was 36 at the time. And after reviewing my 36 years of life, I realized I really didn't do anything of importance. It was very selfish at that time. Education was for myself to get a higher education at a nice school. The work that I was doing was to get money to get a car, a computer, all that stuff. And so I told myself, I gave myself an ultimatum. I said, I'm going to do something. And something told me within to continue taking the pen and the notepad and continue asking people without any reservations whatsoever regarding where I would live, what I would wear, how I'd look, all the things that were consuming my thought process before that. So June 3rd, 2009, after other previous obligations were done, wanted to see a certain movie, wanted to cheer on a certain sports team for the last time, I said to myself, I will do this in a one-pointed way, and that started June 3rd, 2009. So the inspiration came from questioning compassion myself after watching this video, and also the lives of those that I saw that have come before me that took that step of turning belief, turning want, turning wish into an actual action of doing.
Do you feel that, and when you talk about those lives that came before you, many people think about intellectual and political heroes who have taken this idea of nonviolence, especially nonviolence in the face of some sort of oppressive force, often a government. And we think of Henry David Thoreau, who inspired Mahatma Gandhi, who inspired Martin Luther King Jr., who's inspired many of us. I'm wondering the extent to which you had already read works by many of these heroes of compassion and nonviolence and peace, or if this is this sort of reading is an ongoing part of your life as you continue work on this compassion project.
It's both. That's a great question. It's both. Because beforehand, I'd known of Gandhi, I'd known of Dr. Martin Luther King. Read through Earl in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And like you pointed out, saw the, I would say, lineage of them. I will throw this in at the moment because it's on my mind. Tolstoy is my latest person that I'm reading. I recently read The Law of Love and The Law of Violence, which is the influence to Gandhi.
Mm-hmm.
I also want to point out, in the same sense of the people you mentioned, I think, and also in the sense of Peace Pilgrim, they protested. And I thought of this word protest, and I use it in the sense of being a testimonial for something. Gandhi was for India. Dr. Martin Luther King was for civil rights. These things came in opposition to other powers that be. And if you ask them, I would say that it was what they were standing for that was important to them. Because when you stand for something, there's going to be inevitably someone or something that is in the opposition to that thing. The intent of it and the strength and power, I believe, of compassion is what I stand for. Even at the corner, it comes into conflict with people who come up and say they don't believe in compassion. They don't think it's useful. They don't think it can work in the things that are going on in the world today. That's fine. Everyone has their belief, right to believe what they want. As far as my time here spent, I choose to protest compassion.
Excellent. David Bro is my guest. He's known around town as the Compassion Guy. Is that a title that that you invented for yourself, that others invented for you, and how comfortable are you with it?
It is something that others have invented for me. I believe the word guy is weak.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer to respect the effort. I prefer others to respect the 9 months that my parents took to come up with the name David.
Okay.
So I would appreciate that people call me David Bro. I am fine with Compassion Man.
All right.
Man is a much stronger word than guy. Again, referring to examples you used earlier, it's as though you would call Martin Luther King that civil rights guy.
Right.
Or Gandhi the India independence guy. I believe guy is a weaker word. And what I intend to do to increase awareness of compassion, I take it seriously. And I believe the word guy demeans the seriousness of it.
All right, good. What about your work at Stanford, and especially your focus, if I remember correctly, at Stanford, you were an urban studies major with a focus on community organization. I'm wondering about the extent to which you also found inspiration in your classes, and if you find yourself reflecting on concepts in urban studies and community organization, if those come up to frame your reading, as well as your reflection. You have a number of hours there at Third and C when, unlike the rest of us, you're not staring at a screen. You're not in conversation that entire time. You have a lot of time to reflect. And you probably reflect on compassion. You reflect on your reading. But I'm wondering to what extent you also reflect on lessons learned in the classes you've taken at Stanford and elsewhere.
While I was at Stanford, I took a lot of sociology classes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think what I notice as people pass by, and more so as of late, kind of referring back to the recognition of people, I realize who's comfortable as they're passing by. At a urban planning standpoint, the corner is visual. I can see a lot of people. A lot of people can see me. It's a high traffic area, about car, foot, bus, bike, for Davis purposes.
Yeah.
And I learned how to interact with people a lot better than I did before. The fact that if you just smile and make eye contact with people, that's an invite to ask people the question.
that I ask about compassion?
I've yet to really sit down and think of specific instances and classes that I've taken. I know that I would say that I know I took a lot of sociology classes. Exactly how they've affected what I do now, I'd have to think about a little bit more. I know some of the urban planning classes are a little bit more direct.
I was thinking about what you had said about Peace Pilgrim, and you got to tell that story with some visuals at the talk that you gave at Davis Community Church about a month ago now. Peace Pilgrim depended upon the kindness of strangers for her sustenance and shelter. People see you out there for a number of hours every day, primarily daylight hours, with breaks from time to time. I'm wondering if people have perhaps concerned that at least during the day you don't seem to be earning money outside of book sales for food, sustenance, shelter. I'm wondering if people have offered you things, such as a meal, an umbrella, whatever would be relevant.
Meal, bike, was given a guitar, drinks, coffee, frozen yogurt, offers for radio shows.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people come up and they'll be very honest and ask directly, how do you support yourself? At a time, I was staying at Davis Community U Meals over their 18-month program, and they were kind enough to house me, knowing that I was working on the book project. Since the book project has come out, I've made some money and been able to save some while staying with friends in town after finishing the 18-month program. A lot of people come by to make sure that I'm all right. A lot of people come by and ask, is there anything you need? A lot of since it's near a couple restaurants, a lot of people will offer to sit down for a meal. It's frequent. Mm-hmm. Probably about 2 or 3 times a week that people come by and offer something or just check in to see how I'm doing.
And so what do you end up telling those people, like the ones who ask if you need anything or if you'd like to join them for a meal?
Oh, if I'm hungry, I'll go eat.
Yeah.
If I'm hungry, I'll go eat. If not, I'll say thank you, I'll pass, I just ate.
Excellent. And in terms of your life now, are there other things that you need? I remember you talked at your event at Davis Community Church about a vow of minimalism, if you will, in that you've opted not to encumber yourself with a great number of possessions, and that this has simplified your life. But I'm wondering if, while standing on the corner, how you might finish this sentence. I wish I had a, you know, whatever that might be.
There is something I've contemplated the need for, and I always ask the question, will this help increase awareness of compassion? A laptop.
Yeah.
That's the one thing that would make I intend to do more presentations to make the work that I'm doing with the presentations a bit more efficient, I would say. And that's the one thing as far as material stuff goes. The other thing that I recently began asking a couple people as things progress, as things have grown, as things have built, to help in specific areas that I know that they are able to do. And one of that is to try to contact other places in Davis that may be interested in having that type of discussion on compassion. And also, I do have a lot of books left, and I want to further distribute them at a larger scale, other than being at the corner.
Right. Many people who have made lifelong commitments to some sort of cause also try, in additional ways than the ones we've already mentioned, also try to think about the world with small choices that they make. So some, especially here in the city of Davis, choose, as I most often try to do, choose to bicycle rather than to drive, or choose to be vegan or vegetarian, knowing, for instance, how resource-rich a diet that's heavy in meat can be, or even things that are more conceptual. I choose always to be honest, like always to tell the truth, which could get some people in trouble. Some people choose always to tell the truth. Some people choose to share the truth when it's not asked for. So, you know, there are different ways of approaching the truth. I'm wondering if there are other choices that you've made that either have direct or indirect connections to your focus on increasing compassion in the world.
I don't understand the question. So
that's all right. Are there other ways that you reflect or share compassion in your day-to-day life beyond what we've already discussed?
Yeah. I hear you. In the choices that I make, you referred to it earlier, I minimize. I believe that, and this goes back to Tolstoy, something I read about that Tolstoy says, is that luxury in some form oppresses someone somewhere. And because of technology and the way the world is now, we realize that more now than he wrote at the end of the 1800s in Russia,
right?
Even. So when I choose, again, when I choose the things that I need, i.e. laptop, it's necessary if I need that for what I want to do in this life. The things that I eat, I minimize my eat. I'm starting a fast tomorrow.
Oh, yeah?
So I'm going to minimize just the cleansing fast. So I'll minimize what I eat. I eat simply. I think simply. I got to the point where I was able to be present of what I'm thinking, and I discarded complex thoughts, which made life simple.
Mm-hmm.
Simple thoughts, simple life. And in that, I believe, is a compassionate act and makes me and keeps me in a state of presence where I'm able to act compassionately to those that come by the corner.
Excellent. Well, David Brough has been my guest. He is the man who stands for compassion, who you'll find at the corner of C and 3rd Streets. He's the author of the book, A Compilation of Concepts on Compassion, which you can purchase from him legally. I've seen his business license. He keeps it right there under a rock with the word compassion on it at 3rd and C Streets here in the city of Davis. David, I feel like we could talk for another hour about this. It's a topic that interests me, but we've got another guest eager to come on the live line. So thanks very much for coming down to KDBS this afternoon and talking about compassion on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
You're welcome, and happy anniversary.
Thank you very much. Thanks. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back in just a moment. My next guest on the radio show is Kevin Simmons, the writer, musician, and filmmaker, who will be joining us here on KDVS, 90.3 FM, Davis.
your number.
What's yours?
My number is cool.
So, mine is cool too.
But is your number cool enough?
Here, let me check. Yep, it's cool enough. Is your refrigerator cool enough? Don't let germs grow on your food. Keep your fridge between 32 and 40 degrees and stay healthy.
Brought to you by the Food Tech Club and Food Science Department here at UC Davis.
Before I introduce you to Kevin Simmons, I have this important message to share with you from Advanced Home Health. Advanced Home Health reminds motorists that summer is a time when excitable children will be playing outdoors. Please drive carefully around parks, playgrounds, and residential areas. A ball on the street means a child is not far behind. This important message is brought to you by Advanced Home Health in Sacramento. You can reach them at 916-978-0744. They're on the air because they care about the safety of children in this community. Kevin Simmons is here on the live line. Kevin Simmons is a writer, a musician, and a filmmaker, born in Chicago and raised in New Orleans. We'll get to hear a New Orleans-inspired poem in a few minutes. He studied music at Vanderbilt University and went on to receive a master's degree in music at Tennessee State University. Later, he completed his PhD in music education at the University of South Carolina. Kevin Simmons has had global influence and has performed his music in the UK and the Caribbean. His films have also been screened across many cities worldwide, including Hong Kong. He's lived in Japan, where he founded the Tono International Arts Association, and he was also a recipient of a Fulbright Fellowship to Singapore, where he started the first ever poetry workshop in Changi Prison. As a writer and poet, he has published numerous books, including Mad for Meat, that's this year's book, Collective Brightness, LGBTIQ Poets in Faith, Religion, and Spirituality, also published this year, and next year, Oda Benga, Under My Mother's Roof. Additionally, his essays, articles, and poems have been published in numerous literary magazines, including ones that you've heard of. Currently, he creates and teaches privately in San Francisco, but right now, we have him. Kevin Simmons, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
Absolutely. Well, I'm excited, too, because although I won't be able to be there, you're giving a poetry reading with another poet this coming Monday evening at the Sacramento Poetry Center, which is the local beacon of creativity here in the Sacramento Valley, and that's exciting. Tell me how it is that you balance all these things that you do with your music, your filmmaking, and then as well your poetry.
Well, I've said this time and time again. It all comes naturally. I'm a child of Whitman, and Whitman said, "I am large, I contain multitudes." And instead of pigeonholing myself, I just give in to all of the creative impulses that I have, all of these things that I want to express and do. And I don't think it's so much of a balancing act. It's just being who I am.
That's great. When I, Garrison Keillor was here on campus about, that was 2003, and he said that one of the ways that he gets around writer's block is that whenever he's blocked on a project, he has three or four others waiting for him right there, and so he just steps to the side and works on the next one.
That's right.
And it helps to keep him productive, and it sounds like some of that that same spirit has inspired you. But you must have also found that Whitmanic spark somewhere as a child to have chosen this path in life. Did that come from a teacher or parents or some sort of discovery?
Well, you already mentioned that I grew up in New Orleans, and New Orleans is it's a funky place. I don't know if you've ever been, but
I have.
Yeah, it's so historic, and there's so many different kinds of influences and people. There are nut jobs and beat poets and jazz musicians and street musicians and my mother was a big influence because she is a lover of music. I've heard from her friends and my other relatives that when she was younger, she was quite the singer. So I grew up listening to a lot of music in the house. She played 45s and LPs all the time. And that had to have had an influence on my love for music. And my mother was also a big reader. So I grew up watching her read and sort of mimicking her reading. I would just pick up a book and try to mimic what I'd seen her do. And she was also a lover of movies. So I think most of my creativity comes from my mother and also from my aunt, for whom I've written the poem that I'll read a little bit later after Katrina. My aunt was a poet, and she wrote essays, and she was a visual artist, so my mother and my aunt were the biggest influences on my work, and they did many things, and so I guess that's why I do many things.
It's wonderful to have those intellectual and creative trailblazers in the family, because they show you the path. Isn't that great?
That's right.
Wonderful. So the work that you've done in the intervening years has brought you all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me how it is that you've settled on San Francisco, assuming that you've settled. I don't know if that's the right word. And then what sort of projects are you working on these days? Do you find that San Francisco is a receptive place and a supportive place for those sorts of projects?
Well, I first came to San Francisco in 1996. I had been out of college for 2 years, and I taught middle school music in Clinton, Maryland, which is right outside of D.C. And I actually followed a person out here. I thought I had fallen in love, so I wanted to follow him out here. He was living here. And so that's why I came out initially. And I've lived here off and on since 1996. And in between, I've traveled and lived other places at home and abroad, but San Francisco is like a big magnet for me. It's very unlike the South where I grew up. It's a place where I feel very free as a queer man. It's a place where I feel like I can do many things at once. And there's a lot of art here. So it's a good place for me to feel inspired and to take risks in my work. But at the same time, there are a lot of things here that aren't as, how can I say, they aren't as warm. I do miss some of the warmth of the South, never meeting a stranger, talking to people all the time, and
right.
You know, I feel like I don't get that as much here, but I get to the South enough in performances so that I'm able to feel that warmth. So you asked about current projects. I'm doing so many things. Mad for Meat, my first collection of poetry, is just out September 1st, and my publisher, Jesse Landini, will be here in a couple of days, and we're going to be reading together at numerous places in Sacramento as well, also in Santa Cruz and down in L.A. and here in San Francisco. And I've also released an edited anthology, which you spoke about, Collective Brightness, LGBTIQ Poets on Faith, Religion, and Spirituality. And so we're going to be doing readings internationally for that because the contributors are all over the world, the UK, Japan, Australia, all over Korea. So that's another thing I'm very excited about, getting to meet these poets, creating community internationally. And I'm lucky because, and maybe this is a rule of thumb, I should follow this from here on out. I think I should always release a poetry collection and an edited anthology at the same time, because I'm able to hawk my poetry collection at these anthology readings. It's great.
That's a great idea.
Right, isn't it? And there are so many people who come to hear the other poets, not knowing who I am, but they become acquainted with my work. And there's also films that I'm working on, and there's a lot of stuff. And it's all exciting, and it's all connected in some way. It's me trying to figure out how to find my way through this world, how to be expressive, and how to connect with people.
Yeah, I know what you mean about connecting with people, and let me remind folks that Kevin Simmons is my guest, and if you want to Google him, it's S-I-M-M-O-N-D-S. Kevin Simmons is here on the KDBS radio show, and we're talking about the variety of his creative projects, including two books that he'll have with him when he reads at the Sacramento Poetry Center this coming Monday evening. So that would be the 12th of September. The other advantage you have, of course, is that the people who so appreciate the community that you've helped to build with your anthology, Collective Brightness, LGBTIQ Poets in Faith, Religion, and Spirituality, all those folks, some of them may show their appreciation by purchasing your most recent book as well. So some will come out for the anthology and buy your book. Some will come out to see you and buy the anthology. So it seems like an excellent compliment for this book tour you have coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Well, in terms of heroes that you have, you talked about your family and about Walt Whitman. Who are some other people writing today or who are important to you when you're discovering your voice as a writer that you'd like to mention to folks listening at home so that they may want to do a little more research themselves?
Well, two people come to mind immediately. First, Lucille Clifton, who passed away recently. She was a wonderful poet who inspired me really early on when I began to write seriously. She's known for her brevity, but her brevity doesn't mean that her work is at all shallow or flighty by any means. It's very deep and resonant and very human. So she's been a huge, huge influence, and I've actually got to work with her a few times through Kaveh Kanem, which is an African-American retreat and workshop for poets, and she worked with us quite a bit, and she was wonderful, so warm and generous. And the other person is someone who was introduced to me when I studied poetry very briefly at Mills College, and it's someone that you also know, Jan Van Staveren, who was my teacher at the time, and Jan is now in Oregon. We miss her. She introduced me to the poet Richard Ronan, who is originally from the East Coast but spent a lot of time in the Bay Area and who, like me, had an affinity for Japanese culture. And Jan brought in his collection, A Radiance Like Wind or Water, in 1997. I'll never forget. And I have this odd habit of turning to the last page of collections, poetry collections, and reading the final poem. And the final poem in A Radiance Like Wind or Water is a poem called Beach Walk. And I later learned through Ronan's publisher that he had written it on, I think, the back of an envelope or something. He was at the beach. And it is this expansive, human, lovely poem about humanity and how we're in this tangle of time together, just you and I. And it's just this brilliant, brilliant lyric poem. So after reading that poem, I was a Ronan fanatic. I read everything that he had ever written. Went to libraries to find these obscure poems that he had published. So he continues to be an inspiration. He died, I believe, in 1988 of AIDS. But his work and his spirit lives on in my consciousness, and I think, too, in some of what I try to get at in my writing.
That's wonderful. It's funny you say that because I knew Jan Van Staveren very well from 1990 to 96. That's mm-hmm. when we both finished with our PhDs here mm-hmm. at UC Davis. So she went on to teach at Mills and other places.
Right.
And but she, I had known her and spent a lot of time talking about poetry with her just when she was discovering Ronan. So I'm glad
right.
that she could pass along some of that enthusiasm
yes.
that she shared with me.
Yes.
That's terrific. Well, you spoke of brevity before in poetry with regard to Lucille Clifton. We had talked off mic about how some of your poems are short, but you've got a longer one about cleaning up after Hurricane Katrina. And I'm wondering, Kevin Simmons, if you'd be willing to share that with our listeners today.
Certainly. Before I begin, I just want to remind people that this is a poem that I wrote in memory of my Aunt Trina, who just a couple of years after Katrina was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. So she left us a couple of years ago. But her legacy is just so deep in me. And one of the most poignant moments in my life really was spending time with her cleaning up her home in New Orleans, a house that I spent a lot of time in. The poem is After Katrina. There's no Sabbath in this house, just work. The black of garbage bags, yellow cinched throats opening to gloved hands. Black tombs along the road now, proof she knew to cherish the passing things. Even those muted before the water came, before the mold's grotesquery, and the wooden house choked on bones. My aunt waged through the wreckage, failing, no matter how hard she tries at letting go. I look on glad at her failing, her slow rites, fingering what she'd once been given to care for. The waistbands of her husband's briefs, elastic as memory, the blank stare of rotted drawers, their irises of folded linen still, smelling of soap and wood and clean hands. Daylight through these silent windows, and I'm sure now, today is Sabbath, the work we do, prayer. I know what she releases into the garbage bags, shiny like wet skins of seals, beached on the shore of this house.
Well, that's beautiful.
Thank you.
Very nice, Kevin.
Thank you.
In terms of New Orleans, I remember reading before Katrina that New Orleans had more buildings in the National Registry of Historic Places than any other American city.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if you have any reflections, because you get back to the South from time to time,
mm-hmm.
on what you feel are the most important changes in New Orleans before and after Hurricane Katrina.
Well, this is an emotional subject for me. I was actually just there about a month ago. When the storm was approaching, my mother and stepfather left and went to Natchez, Mississippi, where my stepfather's from. And they remained there through the storm and remained there until a month ago, until they moved back into Louisiana and purchased the house. They didn't move back to New Orleans. New Orleans is very different now in many ways. As you know, and most of the country knows, a lot of the musicians, a lot of the service industry workers were those who lived in the Ninth Ward and other places that were really ravaged by the levees breaking.
Right.
So those people haven't been able to return. And even people who were in the middle class, like my aunt, couldn't return because things like insurance had gotten so astronomical that she couldn't afford to really take out flood insurance on her home, so she ended up not returning. So a lot of what I consider the heart of the city, those people who make the city work, have not returned. And the racial demographic is really interesting. There are lots of Latinos that live there now. And I think it's great that they're able to find work and raise their families and find a place to live. But that means that the city is a little different. Things change. But I can grieve that a little bit, and I am grieving that a little bit. And in fact, when I was home again a month ago, my mother sold the home that I grew up in, and I went just to see, you know, what it looked like. And the house is gone. Everything is gone. I had to do a double, you know, I had to double check to make sure I was in the right space, because it's just surreal to drive to the neighborhood where you grew up, and the house that you grew up in is gone. So it's very emotional for me to talk about this. You know, right now, there are all of these storms, and people have been, going through great devastation recently with all of the crazy weather patterns. And so I understand what they're going through. It's just the earth doing what the earth needs to do. And we just move on, but we certainly grieve.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it, I guess it does make, I mean, in addition to grieving, those of us who can have artistic responsibilities to help represent that grief and reflect on loss in ways that not everyone can, whether it's through music or film, or in the case of your two new books, especially your own book of poetry, Man for Meat, through the written word and through poetry.
Right.
Well, Kevin Simmons, you'll be giving a reading this coming Monday night at the Sacramento Poetry Center at 7:30. I hope that you get a good turnout and that you're able to sell some copies of Mad for Meat, as well as your new anthology, Collective Brightness, LGBTIQ Poets in Faith, Religion, and Spirituality.
Well, this has been great, Andy. I'm so glad that I got a chance to do this. And, yeah, I hope everybody comes out.
I do, too. Kevin, it's been a pleasure to meet you over the phone. I hope to do it in person sometime. And thanks very much for appearing on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thank you.
Take care.
Take care.
You're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM, Davis. After a little bit more jazz from James Williams, we'll be right back with Closing Words. As you may know, October, coming up in a few weeks, is National Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And Bueller and Bueller Structural Engineers, in recognition of Breast Cancer Awareness Month, would like to remind women to have screening mammograms at recommended intervals. Today's low-dose state-of-the-art mammography can detect tumors too small to be discovered by touch. So don't delay. Early diagnosis means that you'll have better than a 95% chance of successful treatment. This message comes courtesy of Bueller and Bueller Structural Engineers in Sacramento. You may reach them at 916-443-0303 or online at bbse.com. They care about the health of the women in our community. Closer to home and catching up on these important messages, I'd like to tell you about the High School International Student Exchange Programs. The nonprofit ASSE International Student Exchange Program is seeking local high school students interested in becoming exchange students in a foreign country for an academic year or summer program. Exchange students live with a caring host family while attending high school and learning about the language and people of their chosen host country. If you're interested, you can contact Nona Skinner at 1-800-733-2773. A week from tomorrow, we'll have another New Orleans poet in town. This is David Rowe. He'll be reading at the John Atsoulis Gallery as part of the ongoing Poetry Night reading series. A native of Worcester, Massachusetts, David Rowe was educated at Swarthmore. His poems have appeared in the Cortland Review, North American Review, Big Bridge, Dorado, Solid Quarter, Exquisite Corpse, Yop, and the anthology The Maple Leaf Rag. A poet accomplished on stage and on the page, he's read his poetry on the Mo Green Poetry Show and on radio station WWOZ. He represented New Orleans when the Wave Books Poetry Bus Tour and S.A. Griffin's Poetry Bomb Tour came to New Orleans. And he served as poet in residence at Peter Anderson's Beauty Shop. Currently, he's teaching poetry writing at the Covenant House, a shelter for homeless youths. His full-length collection, Unsolicited Poems, is available at Verna Press, VERNAPress.com. His name, again, is David Rowe, and he'll be reading on the 15th of September, a week from tomorrow, here in the city of Davis at the John Atsoulis Gallery. If you wish to, you can find out more by visiting poetryindavis.com. That was the website I was just reading from. I'd like to thank my guests this afternoon on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. They include Kevin Simmons, who reached us on the live line from San Francisco, as well as the Compassion Man, David Brough. David Brough graduated from Stanford. He's the author of the book, A Compilation of Concepts on Compassion, comprised of thousands of anonymous entries in reply to the question, what is compassion? You can find him at 3rd and C Street, as you probably know if you are a resident of Davis. It's back to school night at Harper Junior High, so I'm heading back to school. Happy anniversary to my wife, Kate. 19 happy years. Looking forward to the next 19. Next year, we'll have to throw a party. My name is Dr. Andy, and assuming that the sub for the next show shows up, I'll see you next week for another edition of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.